Moving on, Lord, we'll call this House Resources Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that the time is now 1:48 p.m. Wednesday, April 28, 2021. Developing a quorum, we have with us Representative Shragi, Representative Gillum, Representative Hannon, Representative McKay, Representative Fields, Representative Kronk, Vice Chair Hopkins, myself, Representative Putkadup. Representative Rauscher should be joining us momentarily. I'd like to offer our thanks to Recording Secretary Robin and our LIO moderator Doug, and welcome Tim Clark in the audience to help us work on House Bill 171. First thing on the agenda, though, before that is House Bill 98, and it's our fifth hearing regarding FLUPS and BIFs and timber sales by Department of Natural Resources. We last heard this bill April 23 and completed the amendment process. Ledge Legal has provided us a committee substitute that incorporates the adopted amendments and makes conforming changes to the legislative drafting style. You should have the mentioned documentation in your packets. I'd like to ask Grace to come and walk us through the changes currently labeled version B. Grace, if you can introduce yourself, put your name on the record, and walk us through the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Grace Irvin, staff to Representative Putkatuk and the House Resources Committee. Just wanted to briefly walk members through the summary of changes which you should have before you that are reflected in the CS for House Bill 98, which is version B in draft form before you as well. So first off, the sections have been renumbered from version A to reflect changes. In the first section, section one, we have inserted to uncodified law new legislative intent language. In section three, which is AS 3805-110C, there's language added requiring the commissioner to consider detrimental effects on the surrounding environment and effects on wildlife habitat of a timber sale when determining applicable provisions under which to offer timber. Section nine is the next changed section, which is 3805-118. This adds a new subsection E, allowing the commissioner to require a purchaser provide additional analysis and or retain a consultant to provide needed financial or technical data to complete a best interest finding for a sale. To be clear, this was at one point in statute in a different section when the amendment sponsored by Representative Hannon passed in the previous meeting. It joined a new part of the statute. So it is a new subsection E, but it is language that we have seen in statute previously. Section 12 is our next changed section, which is 4115030B. This removes language prohibiting general fund appropriations to be used for emergency firefighting personnel engaged in non-emergency activities. And our last changed section is the repealer section, section 14. And like I said previously, this deletes a reference to AS 3805-123G from the list of repealed sections in the bill. And Mr. Chairman, I believe that completes our major changes. There were slight drafting changes to conform to legislative drafting style, but that is the substantive list of changes.
Thank you, Grace. Before we go to the administration for their closing comments, I'd open it up to committee members for questions, comments, closing statements, or questions specific to some of the changes that Grace outlined. Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is Mr. Dabney on line?
He's not on this system. Oh, he is on Teams. Okay. Yes, he is. Do you have a question for him?
I do. Mr. Dabney, I'm looking at Section 3, the change part, is Section 3 already in the Forest Practices Act?
Through the chair, Representative Crump, in Section 3, now Section 3, factors 1 through 6 are more specific to what would be used to determine the type of contract. That's not an environment, and they're generally not associated with environmental issues. The new items 7 and 8 are considering environmental issues, which would be covered by the Forest Resource and Practices Act.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dabney and Representative Kronk. We're going to ask the administration and give them an opportunity, actually, to just provide some closeout comments in regards to House Bill 98 as amended, if there aren't any other questions from committee members. Seeing or hearing none, Mr. Dabney, if you can please provide closing comments on House Bill 98.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the House Resources Committee members. I've appreciated the opportunity to have these discussions with you here in the various hearings as well as one-on-one. As far as where we're at with the bill as currently in the committee substitute, the administration has no comment and that we are okay with this committee substitute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dabney. With that, do members have any closing comments, questions in regards to HB 98 while we have Mr. Dabney on the line? Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I will not be supporting this bill without language on Alaska Hire. As we discussed at the previous hearing, I think there is some good language in this bill. I do appreciate the addition by Representative Kronk in terms of integration with firefighting. I think that makes a lot of sense, but, you know, thinking about essentially streamlining a process in a way that could benefit a multinational company without ensuring local benefits, I don't think meets our constitutional mandate in terms of maximizing benefits for Alaskans. These are state lands, so we're not talking about a free market here. We're talking about our land. How do we best use our land to generate jobs and other benefits for Alaskans? So, you know, maybe we get lucky and the process works out and we help Alaskans, but I think without statutory requirements to support local hire, to support local mills, we're kind of going on a lick and a promise, and that's just not the best policy. I think really the history of Alaska is a history of resource development that either did or did not benefit the state, and I think we've seen time and again that foreign interests will absolutely extract our resources and don't really care whether that extraction is sustainable, don't really care if it helps local jobs. You know, that was true from the Russians to the Pacific Northwest fish harvesters, and I think that when we have resources, we should develop them with very strong guarantees for maximum benefit for Alaskans. I just think this bill doesn't meet that measure yet. But I certainly do appreciate, like I said, Representative Kronk's addition in terms of firefighting. That's great policy, but on balance, I can't support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Further questions, comments in regards to HB 98 as amended so far? Did I see your hand? Oh, sorry. Okay, with that, Mr. Dabney, I know we had you, provide some closing comments in regards to the committee substitute, but if there's anything else you'd like to say as the bill sponsor or Mr. Orman online, if there's anything else you'd like to say before we look to the will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman and Tim Dabney here, Division of Forestry, DNR. I hope that we are able to get the support of the committee and pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dabney. With that, what's the will of the committee, Mr. Vice Chairman?
Mr. Chair, I move House Resource Committee substitute for House Bill 98, Work Order 32-GH1607/B from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And I'll object, Mr. Chairman, for the reasons previously stated.
Thank you, Representative Fields and Vice Chair Hopkins. Previously stated, so I won't ask you to restate all of that in regards to your objection. I'm going to assume it's maintained.
Yep.
Let's go to vote, Grace.
Representative McKay.
Yes.
Representative Fields.
No.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
No.
Representative Rauscher?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Gillum?
Yes.
Representative Scroggie?
No.
Chair Putkatuk?
Yes.
5 yeas, 4 nays.
And with 5 yeas, 4 nays, the committee substitute for House Bill 98 has moved from committee. I've been trying to make it a practice to note the next committee of referral for pieces of legislation we move out of the committee, and House Bill 98 is finance. So with that, we'll move on to House Bill. Oh, sorry. We'll take a brief adieu so we can get the committee report signed. Back on the record, we'll now pick up where we left off on House Bill 171, sponsored by Representative Hannon. We had some questions and an initial introduction to the bill the last meeting. I believe there was some follow-up that was provided via email in regards to the health protective limits that was posed by Representative Scroggie. And those should have been posted to basis for the full committee's edification. Thank you for joining us, Representative Hannon, at the testifiers table versus your seat over here. And Mr. Clark, before we continue the invited testimony, I'd like to open it up if you guys want to make any opening comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sarah Hannon, and I will have my chief of staff, Tim Clark, address the homework assignments that he has undertaken the last couple of days.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Clark, staff to Representative Hannon. We did distribute a memo to the members as well as a an additional document, that being the full report of the Michigan Science Advisory Task Force, which is describes how they came to their conclusions in terms of setting allowable maximum levels for the 7 PFAS, you know, included in their report and subsequently including in this legislation. That was in response to a question from Representative Schrage, who I believe simply asked, in terms of the various PFAS compounds out there, I believe there are as many as 18. How was it that we came to decide to include these specific 7 in the legislation and at the levels of allowable tolerance? So, other questions, I believe it was the hope to have our legislative legal bill drafter Marie Marks available today for questions mainly regarding the liability sections of the bill. She unfortunately couldn't be here this afternoon because she is buried in work with our operating budget, and that was hard to argue with, Mr. Chairman. On that question, though, one thing I would like to point out is that when it does come to, say, Section 1, subsection 3603.345A, when it comes to the basic liability of the sort of polluter pays approach, this actually is the current sort of regulatory practice of the Department of Environmental Conservation. You could characterize the bill as simply codifying that, specifically when it comes to these circumstances and these chemicals, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I think that's the best we're able to do to address any outstanding questions. If any more have come up among the membership, we'd be glad to entertain them. So.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. And perhaps it might be more beneficial to go to the continued invited testimony. I believe we had a lot of questions regarding airport use of PFAS, firefighting foam, et cetera. And I believe we have Mr. Randy Krause, who's a fire chief for Port of Seattle, that is here to provide a little more information on that aspect of the firefighting foam that contains PFAS. Representative Hannon, if you'd like to introduce him, you're more than welcome to. If not, we'll kick it over to him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead and bring him on up.
All right. Mr. Krause, if you could please put your name on the record, your affiliation, residency, and please help inform us on PFAS.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Randy Krause, RANDYKRAUSE. I serve as a fire chief for SeaTac International Airport, and my employer is the Port of Seattle. I currently reside in Duval, Washington, just outside of the city of Seattle. So to start with, I want to thank you to the members of the House Resources Committee for allowing me to testify today. Many of you may recall I have testified before this body in the past, and I'm happy to do so again. My name is Randy Krause. Again, I serve as the fire chief for the Port of Seattle, providing services to SeaTac International Airport. I'm here to share my support for the bill before you and to thank the committee chair and sponsoring Representative Hannon for their leadership. At the Port of Seattle, we have been actively involved with the industry to find a solution and are working with our partners at the FAA to encourage the implementation of a new chlorine-free firefighting foam. While federal law currently requires the use of firefighting foam that includes PFAS chemicals, our airport director, Lance Little, sent the FAA a letter in 2018 urging the FAA to aggressively pursue a chlorine-free option. The 2018 FAA Reauthorization Act, that many of you, not all, are aware of, was passed by Congress and requires the evaluation and implementation of chlorine-free foam by October 2021. Many of my peers at Air Force across the globe have already made the change to fluorine-free foam, and I personally have witnessed fluorine-free foam used with great success, and I'm confident the FAA will find a suitable alternative within the deadline. We recognize that there is a concern in the firefighting industry with the FAA meeting its 2021 deadline. I, however, am confident the FAA will reach a solution, and I'm looking forward to being one of the first, if not the first, airport in the United States to go fluorine-free. We do understand these types of bills have differing effects on various industries. It appears you have addressed some of the concerns we had in Washington State with this bill, and we are happy to work with and help the sponsors as this moves forward. Thank you, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kraus. With that, I'll open up the floor for questions or comments from committee members. Representative Fields.
Thanks. Through the chair, Mr. Kraus, you mentioned that you've seen some different types of firefighting foam. Could you just provide a little more detail? Thank you.
Yes, sir. Representative Fields, in the United States, we're governed by the FAA, and they require us to use mil-spec. Many of our international peers out there, Australia, England, UK, Copenhagen, they've all switched to fluorine-free products with great success and are very happy with the both performance and ability to effectively mitigate fires with the fluorine-free product, meeting the ICAO specification, which has not been adopted in the United States as of yet. And the FAA is working to evaluate. I actually sit on an advisory panel for the FAA currently. They're working on testing fluorine-free products, and they're looking to meet a combination of things, the mil-spec standards and performance requirements, as well as ICAO performance requirements. So I guess specifically to your question, many countries outside of the United States are quite confident and comfortable using fluorine-free products at their airports.
I didn't know that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kraus and Representative Fields. Are there further questions, comments, or general discussion for Mr. Kraus? Representative Hannon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we have Mr. Kraus online, I'd like to ask him a question, which is, Mr. Kraus, our bill has a carve-out for the oil and gas industry related, under the premise that those are really high-temperature fires that we've not seen alternatives to. Since you're in the industry, what do you see, SeaTac may not, but Tacoma has a refinery and transfer capabilities and up in Anacortes. So I assume in Washington they've started to address that also because they've got the same issue of oil and gas infrastructure very close to waterways, which is where the PFAS contamination becomes a concern. So can you tell me what your experience is in helping oil and gas kind of fires with developments on the horizons of alternatives that do not have the fluorine bond that makes PFAS compounds so problematic?
I don't profess to be an expert. I do have a ton of experience in the airport community, but due to my interest in trying to resolve and solve this challenge for airports, I've had the opportunity to engage many in the oil and gas industry. And so one of my biggest requests of the FAA is this mil-spec foam, the foam that contains fluorine, is a very, very robust product, and it is very effective. And so at the airport, I think in my current condition, so I'm going to speak to that first, at the airport is that we don't really have deep-seated, deep pooling fires, which you would have in some of these, what you reference as oil and gas industries. They're more of a plunge, deeper penetration is needed, so they tend to gravitate towards more and it is more effective to have that fluorine-based product. I believe that's what the industry is most comfortable with. On an airport, we don't see those deep pooling fires. It's more shallow, and so fluorine-free products are very effective. So I believe that the mil-spec or fluorine-based products are over-designed that's my personal opinion, for my use at an airport. And what I've been told by industry experts, I've heard both, that's the concern of the oil and gas industry is more that the plunge, where you need to get deeper penetration so they feel more confident. However, there's a group called Last Fire that's having significant success in maybe changing some tactics and some quantity application issues. And I think there's many within the industry outside of the U.S. that would tell you that there are fluorine-free products that would meet those industry needs as well. And I hope that answered your question.
It does. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, there is, excuse me, and I'm sorry, Chair, there is work taking place in the industry, that, and as on the, I think it's cutting edge work, and I think they're finding great success. So if the solution isn't within, you know, it's on the horizon, and it's not that far away, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Krause, and I just wanted to clarify, because I wrote it down, and I think I wrote it down, right, but you said the entity that was working on some of the solutions to getting away from PFAS containing fire suppression for oil industry was at Last Fire, L-A-S-T?
L-A-S-T-F-I-R-E. Yes, and I can send, I have Tim Clark's information. I can send him something to share with you if anybody wants to reach out to learn more. There's a, and I can provide the gentleman's contact. He's a wealth of knowledge and can help you out in that regard.
Thank you for that. I just would ask that Mr. Clark and Representative Hannon forward that to the committee. With that, is there further discussion, questions, comments, while we have Mr. Krause on the line? Seeing or hearing none, thank you for being available, Mr. Krause, for being able to provide a little more in-depth discussion in regards to PFAS, PFOA. The plan is to now set this bill aside and pick it back up at a future date. We weren't sure today how much time we would have, so we didn't schedule too much after floor session. So I just want to let folks know that we're starting to get into potentially some of the longer floor sessions, so the schedule for the next week and a half or two is probably going to be up in the air depending on things. But with that, we do have on Friday House Bill 120, which is state land sales and leases. Our plan with 120 is to adopt a CS that mirrors some of the work that the Senate has done in the companion bill, SB 97, just for continuity purposes, and then hear an introduction of the bill. We'll also bring back up House Bill 135 in regards to geothermal and continue the discussion on that. And then over the course of the next month, we'll probably have a numerous introductory hearings on bills so that we can continue that work in the interim. Representative Fields?
Is there an amendment deadline yet on the PFAS bill?
No, there's not. Okay. And sorry, Representative Hannon, I was going to give you an opportunity to close out the discussion if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah Hannon, for the record, representative for District 33, and I truly appreciate the committee's attention to yet another very complex area of both learning to understand it and regulation. And appreciate the efforts to pursue the knowledge of a complex thing that in the 2-3 years that I've been in office, it's one of those issues that I'd heard the phrase before I became an elective. Now I'm engaged in it, and every time I learn a little bit, I come to understand the complexity of the problem we are facing and how we can address it policy, financially, environmentally, and I appreciate all of your interest in pursuing that, because I think it's a problem that Alaska will be addressing for the next few decades, and trying to make progress on it will be complex, and I know that the chemistry homework is not fun for everybody, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Gillum?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question. The concentration cutoff, who came up with that, the 8 parts per trillion? Just wondering where that came from.
Mr. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Tim Clark, for the record, staff to Representative Hannon. Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillum, these allowable limits were derived from the work of something known as the Michigan Science Advisory Task Force, which was put together, I believe, in 2018-2019 to look at the issues that state is facing, which are extensive across the state. And they assembled a panel of experts and spent a good deal of time going through a lot of the published literature, a lot of the most rigorously peer-reviewed studies and literature on these compounds, and derived what they felt were the closest they could come to safe, allowable levels in drinking water.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. And just to clarify, I know we had talked a little bit about the what's acronymed as MPART. Is that the same organization as the Michigan Science Advisory Work Group, or is that a different?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I'm not actually sure to what you're referring.
Michigan PFAS Action Response Team, I believe, is MPART, and we referenced them in some of the discussion when we introduced the bill as part of the, I believe, the recommendation they produced that incorporated some of the language. So there is a difference between the Michigan Science Advisory Work Group and the MPART.
I got to hear it. If I could help you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative McKay.
Michigan PFAS Action Response Team is MPART, and then Tim, Michigan Science Advisory Task Force. Sounds like two different groups.
Yep.
I believe, Representative, or Chair Petkutak, that they are sort of part of the same effort sponsored by the state government in Michigan, all leading toward the final report that set the allowable levels in drinking water.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Clark and Representative McKay.
Excuse me. If that is not the case, Mr. Chairman, I'll be sure to clarify to the members by email or otherwise.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that the homework documentation was I was understanding it right, so that when I do the homework, I'm not confused. So. With that, I was already in the middle of closing out. Is there further discussion, though? I mean, we got 40 minutes, so. Representative McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I'd like to thank Tim and Rep. Hannon for bringing this forward. Very sticky wicket, as I would describe it. Very difficult problem when you have toxic chemicals that are in groundwater. It seems to me, I'm just trying to be helpful to your cause. We haven't heard from ADEC at all during the testimony. We're referring to a Michigan study, which is fine. I think that I would like to maybe hear from, like, Alaska's experts. Is there, like, a state toxologist for the state of Alaska, and also like the state fire marshal? You know, we hear from people from Seattle, we hear from people from Michigan. I'd kind of like to hear from people that are Alaskans, and they would probably agree with all this. I'm just thinking that it may help strengthen our effort here if we heard from our own experts. ADEC, I don't believe they testified. I don't recall anybody from ADEC. They're the ones that were going to be commanding to enforce these regulations, so I guess I'd kind of like to hear what they think about it. I'm just trying to kind of help, be helpful here. We didn't hear from anybody from our own DOT, so I guess I'm just trying to be helpful, and you know, let's hear from our own people and on how they think we should address this or how they feel about it, and I think that would maybe help your case.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative McKay, and I will say that in the last hearing and in this hearing, we have representatives from the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Transportation, but we do not have anybody from the ADEC. So they were on the line to provide insight with some of the questions and answers and the back and forth, but didn't feel to get engaged just because Mr. Clark and Representative Hannah did such a good job of providing the information and answering the questions. And I'll allow you to respond, Mr. Clark, if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only add that they have been part of the discussions in terms of the development of the legislation in the past. In past hearings on similar legislation and earlier in the last legislature, they also were participating in hearings, and that we feel that, you know, going forward, both in this committee and subsequent committees of referral, they certainly will have every opportunity to weigh in.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Thank you, Representative McKay. Representative Crump.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think something really helpful, again, like Representative Hannon said, this is a new catchphrase for me when I heard it this summer, and it directly affects part of my constituents in the Moose Creek area outside of Eielson Air Force Base. So I really think that while we're doing this, we really should be in contact with. They've already addressed some of the things, and it would be really helpful to have some of those guys on board of discussing what they have done in the Moose Creek area, since that they're already addressing this same problem.
Thank you, Representative Kronk. And that was Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is who you're referencing?
It was, and I'm trying to think. I was this summer. There was I'll have to dig into my notes. I'll see what I can find out.
We'll work with Representative Hannon's office to make sure that the next meeting that we have, we incorporate some of these requests from committee members in regards to the bill and the context of the bill. Representative Gillum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question that can be answered next time. I'm just curious what kind of parts per trillion they're finding in the water systems around the state. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Gillum. All right. Well, are we ready to close out today's meeting now? Representative Schrage.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to reconsider HB 98 at our next committee meeting.
Okay. Giving notice.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Notice.
Friday, I guess we'll bring it back up then. Sounds good. With that, we'll close out and pick back up Friday afternoon. We are adjourned at 2:24 p.m.